This is Messenger Insight, a podcast program brought to you by Oklahoma Baptist and the Baptist Messenger.
Welcome to this special edition of Baptist Messenger Insight podcast. Thrilled to be joined with Walker Moore, author, missionary, ministry founder. Walker, welcome.
Well, thank you. You forgot to say grandfather. That's my number one title.
I knew you might mention that. Well, I'm so glad you said that out of the get-go. Walker, your original column, 20-plus years ago, 1,000-plus columns ago for the Baptist Messenger was on Grandparents Are
The Downfall of America.
And as you are full-throttle grandparenting now, do you still believe that? What did you mean? Tell us all about that.
Well, what I was writing about was a cultural shift. All of a sudden when we were, it takes law and grace to grow a child. And all of a sudden, the grace givers, grandparents, used to live next door to us or live in the house with us. In 1950, 98% of all grandparents were within a short distance of the grandchildren. Now, all of a sudden, because of the shift in America and we're more financially free, they sold the farm, bought a Winnebago, and grandparents are in Las Vegas now with a bumper sticker that says, "I'm spending my children's inheritance." So grandparents are not around for the grandchildren. And so all of a sudden, children grow up with the law. All they have to go to school all day, law. How come you never? Why don't you ever? How come you sit down, shut up, like that? You remember the TV show The Waltons, when John Boy got in trouble, went out on the front porch to sulk, out came Grandpa and put his arm around him and remind him of his worth and value. And so also we see a shift in America where grandparents says, "I've done my job and I'm out of here," or "we live so far away, they can't do it anymore." So that's what I wrote, and it's worse now than it was when I wrote it, 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
Yeah. Well, let's unpack that just a little more, because you're now grandparenting, and we have a whole generation of baby boomers that are in grandparenting mode right now. What do they need to be thinking about in their role, its spiritual role, too?
Well, first of all, I think grandparenting is intentional, I plot out what I do with my grandkids. I want to have certain goals and results I like to see. For one thing, I have given all titles to their name. We got Titus the Honorable, we got Cohen the Good-Hearted, and we got River the Peacemaker. And I find that biblical because that is you cast into them character and values by that. And guess what? They grew up to be like their names. Whatever you cast into them, what's come out of them. And so we always remind them that you're an honorable person, Titus. You always do what's right, even though it's against all odds, even though your heart tells you differently. You want to make the right choices, be an honorable man. Cohen the Good-Hearted, they went out trick-or-treating for Halloween, and he thought his job was to collect candy from everybody else to give away. And when he got back home, they said, "Oh, we're out of candy," and they're turn off the light. And Cohen says, "No, I collected all this candy to give away." And he gave away the last piece, not even keeping one piece for himself.
Wow.
He's Cohen the Good-Hearted. We're Rivers, too, so I don't know. He just blabs a lot and talks 100 miles an hour, and he uses partial English, which has been a lot of fun. So River the Peacemaker, my goal that God will help him to be blessed are the peacemaker, for the kingdom will be theirs, and I want him to become the peacemaker. So by just even giving titles and using that title over and over, if you read my writings, I use that title when I write to them. I'm leaving a legacy to them through the Baptist Messenger publication. I collect them, save it for them, so one of these days when they get old enough, they'll get a collection of the articles I wrote with their name in it. And so that's just one thing I'm doing.
Well, talk about the different stages. I know you've experienced, up to eight years old or so. What are some keys at these different phases, early on to as they're growing up? What are some key things to think about in grandparenting?
Well, I would have been a better parent if I could start as a grandparent first. I hear people say that, but that's absolutely true, I found out, in fact, grandparenting has taught me more about myself than what I'm thinking I'm going to do with them. And I did not know I was such grace. I remember with my kids, I was not near as grace giver to them. I was more law. Now, all of a sudden, my sons say, what happened to our dad, you know, because they spill milk on the carpet. And I go, it's all right. It'll clean up, you know. I would, can't you be more careful, you know. So I find myself, you know, that as I learn more about grandparenting, I am also a better dad now than I have ever been, which I thought unusual. In fact, both my boys said, Dad has changed a lot since grandkids come along, and I'm a better father to them as I learned to be a grandfather. So, you know, as young, my job was to keep them safe and out of harm and try to get back home with her. Whatever they took to school, they at least brought it back home. And that was my whole goal in life, you know, and take them to church. But my grandchildren, I see much more intentional of the time, you know. I did not know I had X-ray vision, you know. When nobody else could see a boo-boo on their hand, they show it, nobody can see it. I have the gift to see that boo-boo. And I know where 5 Band-Aids is that can go on and help that boo-boo and stuff. Instead of saying, oh, it's all right, just go on, you know. And I did that as a parent. But as a grandparent, I spend much more empathy and compassion and listen to their hurts. Even though they're fake hurts sometimes, I still listen to it because they need to know that Poppy cares.
That's awesome. You know, thinking of where you said law and grace, that reminds where Christ talks about he came full of grace and truth. And sometimes Christians fall in a ditch one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And the Lord arranged it to where children would have both as they come up. Talk to those parents who may not live close. What could they still do to have a presence and impact?
Oh, that's one of the best things, because my parents and my wife's parents we always lived 400 plus miles away from my grandparents. So when our kids were younger, we went to a lady who lost her husband. Her name was Lucille Hodges. Lucille was you would call her a character. But she was a school teacher, you know, how to operate with kids stuff. And when my father-in-law got sick, we asked her if she could babysit with our kids while we go visit him, and she did. Well, then I realized something, that since I don't have a grace giver for my children, I need to rent one. So what we did was we compromised. As she got older in her life, I took care of her, mowed her yard. I took her to doctor appointments, and we really became family. Lucille came to every event my children had, every ball game, every award at public schools. She came over for Easter and their birthdays, and really became their grandparents, and she poured grace into them. And one day, my older son, he was in high school, and he said, Dad, I'm leaving the house. And he said, where are you going? I'm going to Lucille's house. I said, why are you going over there? He says, well, at least she can listen and understand what I'm saying. And he went to her house and came back, and he was totally fine, you know. It just have that grace givers in you. So I say to parents, find somebody in your church. There's plenty of people in your church who kids live far away, and they see them once or twice a year. They would love to give grace on a weekly or monthly base. And so go to these senior adult classes. Say, we need some of you step up and be grace givers to our children. And it's amazing what happens when those kids get the grace givers put into their lives.
That's awesome. Well, turning to parenting a little bit, you know, we're living in confused times. I mean, we're even basic matters like male and female are challenged, and we see a generation, Gen Z, coming up. What do you think parents most need? What pillars do parents need to be laying down for these children coming up, this Gen Z in America today?
Well, I teach a new teaching called The Box.
Okay.
The box, as I said, your children need to understand several things. And I draw a box, and in that box, I put a crosshairs in it, so I have 4 equal squares there. And I said, everything that God says about us is in the box, and it's all physical. I said, you need to understand that we're either male or female. In Genesis 1:27, he said, created male and female. He created them. I said, that's physical. So in the box, you have to decide whether you're a male or female. Now, I know parents who are letting their kids wait till they get old enough to decide what gender they are. And I'm going, that's ridiculous, you know. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me that you would leave a child who has no value system, no understanding, no basis, no life skills to make a major decision. Well, God didn't leave that up to us, what gender we are. He said, you're the male or female. Those are physical. I think most people know the difference between a male and female. The second thing he said is in Corinthians 13, he says that I once was a child, thought as a child, put away child sin, became an adult. It's always been that you were the child. One day your childhood was closed down, and you had a rite of passage, you had a bar mitzvah or a bar mitzvah in Jewish faith, and you became an adult. So the distance between those two things were, there was no distance. All of a sudden, one day you were a child, another day you're adult, and you took on adult responsibility, adult consequences. But we had what's called the 7 years that America exploded. This whole thing went south on us as far as all those things in a box. Because in 1941, April the 1st, popular science created a new word in the English language, the word teenager. Mm-hmm. Now, the word teenager did not exist before 1941. In fact, growing up, I was called the intermediate department. We weren't called teenagers. In fact, when you got to college, you were in the Baptist Young People Union. You weren't teenagers, okay? So all of a sudden, we had now child, teenager, adult. Now we have child, preteen, post-teen, in-between teeny, the tweenies, they call them there. And now legally, it's basically 8 to 27 is considered adolescence. So you're stepping from childhood to adulthood is now a far, far place away to get to what called adulthood. God never intended that way. You was a child or an adult. Nothing in between that. Jesus was never a teenager. So don't let your children grow up to be teenagers. The second thing, the male-female thing, exploded in 1948 when Alfred Kinsey wrote a book called The Human Sexuality of the Male, where he did this scientific study, interviewed 5,000 men on what human sexuality was for male, and he discovered that 37% of all men are homosexuals. So in the scientific report came out, it says men are not just men, but we have homosexual men, we have bisexual men, we have all these different kind of things. And we start changing the laws of America based upon Alfred Kinsey report. So no longer did you have male nor female. You had male, homosexual, gays, you know. And so now that whole thing is 27 different kinds of sexuality between being a male and female. So all of a sudden, your children can't grow up just knowing what they are. I'm a male. I'm a woman. You know, I'm a child. I'm an adult. And that's what you are. Children obey your parents. That's physical thing there, you know, that relationship. You know, you're going to have sexual relationship with this person here, but not these down here. And the whole thing in the scripture leads us to in the box. The box is not to contain us. It's to protect us from what the Creator created us to be. So the whole thing is exploded. So I said, help your children very early on figure out where they are in the box and why they're in the box. So when they get challenged by the world, but hey, the box is this. I had an event happen to me in Georgia. I did a pastor's conference and a young lady came in and I handed a bottle of bleach and I said, drink it. She said, I'm not drinking that. I said, why? She said, it's poison. I said, how do you know it's poison? I said, the label says poison on it. I said, oh, we can change that. So I pulled a new label out of my pocket and slapped it on top of the manufacturer label and says, 100% good for inside and out. And I said, drink it now. She said, I'm not drinking it. I said, you believe the Creator who created bleach knows the good of it and the bad of it. And you're going to believe the label they put on it. It's good for disinfectant, but it's bad to take internally. She said, yes, I am. I said, why is it when God put a label on us that Satan comes along and relabels it? No longer are we male or female, we're male and these other things in between it there. And so I put, and so we walked away and says, I trust God. The label he put on me is the one that gives me the peace and protection to live the life he wants me to. We're an hour into the conference. The lady stood up and started bawling. I mean, bawling her head off. Ran out of the room. I didn't know what was going on. That don't usually happens unless it's my family meeting or something like that. You know? So, but in a pastor conference, I have that happen. It was kind of unnerving. She came back an hour later and she says, came down, grabbed my microphone. She said, I need to tell you this. I said, what? She says, I'm outside the box. I said, what do you mean? She says, I'm a lesbian. And as you showed the box and you tried to give me the drink bleach, I realized that first off, probably not a Christian. And I asked Christ into my life back in the bathroom there. And I'm no longer, I got back in the box. My name is Danielle, not Dan. And that even a pastor conference, when I presented the box, she saw where she was. So
that's powerful. Thank you for sharing that. That's a good visualization of such truth amid the chaos. So Walker, people know you from your writings in The Messenger. They also know you from your missions work in the I-40. window, but what are you doing now with your ministry career, with what I've heard you call the Back 40? Tell us about the importance of that, Walker.
Well, you know, I spent most of my life taking students into unreached people groups, to places where there are no church, no believers, starting churches in 52 countries. I've taken over 13,000 students on this journey. And when I retired, you know, I was laying in the jungles. I've been in the jungle so much, asleep in a hammock. All these other mission trips are going to stay at the Hyatt Regency. I'm laying in the jungle, zipped in a mosquito net and in my hammock, and there's 10 million buzzing going on. It's so loud. I turn my flashlight. They plug up the netting, and they have to wait for the bats to come eat off the mosquitoes off the net. And, you know, at 67 years of age, I thought, you know, this is probably a job for a younger generation. But I didn't know what to do. And all of a sudden, the Lord began to show me what I've been doing overseas. I need to come back to America. America is now the greatest mission field in the world. You know, our churches are declining. Young people are leaving the faith by the groves. They're going to other cults. They're embracing Mormonism and everything else out there, and somehow we're not raising up a generation of gospel-centered young people. And so my grandfather was a homesteader, and the government gave him four sections of 40 acres. And so he had 160 acres. So when I asked Grandma, where's Granddad at? And he said, well, he's in the Back 40 working. So I decided to come home and work in the Back 40 of America. So I've been going to churches, helping them recenter and to get back into growth. And God has used this, my working with them, and we see churches recentering themselves, growing again. And it's been kind of amazing that at almost, I'll be 70 soon, and that God still can use an old man like me to make a difference in the world.
Well, it's just amazing to me, your energy that God's given you for the task. And you've actually had improvements in health lately too, getting fit and staying active. We're just blessed by all that.
Yeah, I was fit on the mission field, but when I came back home to America, you just explode. I don't know. I guess living in jungles and hiking from village to village and climbing mountains and that kind of stuff, one of the worst things to eat is monkey meat. And even barbecue sauce can't even help it, you know. So I don't eat a whole lot when I'm on the mission field stuff, coming back to America and start eating all American food. I gained a lot of weight, so I went on a diet and began to eat better, and I lost 50 pounds. And
it's wonderful.
And God has just continued to give my health. Had cancer, and now it's gone. And
praise God.
Had diabetes, and I don't have to do much with it. It's taking care of itself. And so
that's praise God. Well, so people can read your weekly column, BaptistMessenger.com, and then the print issue. But with each column, what are you hoping to convey, and what are you wanting the reader to walk away with each time, Walker?
Well, there's two things I always do. I'm not a writer. I say that all the time. I do have a number of books out. I'm writing another book right now. I'm not a writer because I grew up as a dyslexic kid, and writing is the most difficult thing for me. People don't realize how hard it is for me to write. It really. And then I have people who are or surrounds me. They're expert on dyslexic editing. You didn't know there was such thing like that, but there's people who specialize in dyslexic editing. So after I write it and I rewrite it and do all that stuff, it goes to them, and then they get it back and we send it out. But I always try to bring humor and hope. That is always my goal. I really want you to laugh, okay? Because I find that laughter is even our worst day. If I can get you to laugh, you know. People ask me how I lost all my weight, and I said I just quit eating between snacks. So, so you know, you laugh, and always something. Laughing allows the teaching to go in deeper to me. Yeah. Then I always want a biblical truth, you know, that comes in with that. To pair those two things together, if I can do that, then it is to me a grand slam, and I'm doing Jesus ministry.
It's awesome. Well, so often people have this stereotype of Christians are dour, but I've always seen with you that you're giving them a laugh with the teaching and not just a lecture, not just condemning them where they're at. And I think God has just used that in your life and your writings to reach so many people.
Yeah, it's funny how the response to these articles, and when I started writing, I was only supposed to write one article, okay? because they're supposed to find somebody else to take over to write this.
We're still looking.
You're still looking 20-some years later, 22, 23 years later.
Yeah,
You're still looking for somebody to take over. And I, every week I'm going, either God give me a fresh thought or come back now. Come back quickly, Jesus, because I have nothing to say. And somehow something happens and it brings a thought to my mind because I'm just not a writer. Some people think these thoughts all day long. I have to really ask God to bring them to me and show me. But, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, and it's, for instance, one article I wrote on an article about the disciples more like the Hell's Angels than a Baptist group of deacons, you know. And it was picked up by the European Hell's Angel magazine, and they printed it and sent it out to all the Hell's Angels, this whole thing about Jesus and the disciples, you know.
Wow.
They called me on it. I mean, said, hey, this article is really good, one of the head leaders, and said that was it, you know, you didn't put us down.
Yeah.
You know, you said God could use anybody, whether it worked or not, but I get it. I've been in churches where I've seen people come up to me. I love the article about the dog and the monkey, okay? And they said, that is my favorite article I have ever read. You wrote that? I've never written an article about a dog and a monkey. They confuse me for other people sometimes. Yeah. I get credit for all these really good articles I didn't write. So I find that humorous too, you know?
That's awesome.
I just say thank you so much and just keep on reading.
That's awesome. Well, Walker, it's great to catch up and hear your thoughts on grandparenting and then this Back 40, the mission opportunity right at home, and we'll stay connected to that. Check it out online, baptistmessenger.com. Walker Moore, we'll be looking to hear more about that new book you mentioned a minute ago, but we pray God's grace and peace to you. Anything else you'd leave us with?
Well, yeah, you can go to drwalkermoore.com and the book I've written with The Blessing of the Baptist Messenger, Chicken Lips, Snake Legs, and Jesus. That has really gone well. People have bought one copy, bought 10 copies, Inside Out and Backwards, Rite of Passage Parenting, and our cookbook we did together.
Absolutely.
That's still today. I had orders today for it. I woke up this morning and before I came to Oklahoma City and had $60 worth of orders for Have a Very Merry Aqua Velvet Christmas cookbook.
So I love it.
Those things all got stories of humor and hope in it.
Well, in those books, just as a personal testimony, not only for the individual reader, but it's the type of thing you could use as a family devotional. Kids, everyone of all ages just love it. And so, yeah, check it out, drwalkermoore.com, right? .com. Okay, great. Well, listeners, thank you for joining this episode, and stay connected with what Walker's writing about and all goings-on in Oklahoma Baptist. God bless you.
This Messenger Insight has been brought to you by the Cooperative Program and Oklahoma Baptists. Visit us at baptistmessenger.com or your preferred podcast platform. Oklahoma Baptists, advancing the gospel together.